You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more. Today I'm talking with Jill Moser at Lennon Weinberg in the presence of her show. Jill, thanks for talking with me today.
Great to be here.
Jill, let's talk about this show, which is called Play Replay and has many of your paintings in it and also collage work. I guess the first question I want to ask is, let's just talk about the title, Play Replay. As we just walked through the show, I know a little bit about that, but since the listeners don't, tell me what Play Replay means to you.
So Play Replay was a fun title to use to just set up the dynamic of the show and how I wanted the work to be seen and what I was doing in the work. So play, replay, sort of telling something and then retelling it, enacting something and reenacting it. And the title really could be Play, Replay, Play, Replay, but you know, it could just keep going on. So the loop of that title too, which is so much part of my work always, but in particular this body of work.
And in this series of work, there's also references to film, right? There's titles like Screen Test and Vertigo. So what's your relationship to film, and how did that filter into the titles of all this work?
It's really how I began as a painter. It's always been in the work, sort of latently, but because it's so much a part of how I've developed as a painter and what I think about. But in this case, because I was using silkscreen and its relationship to screen, it seemed like a very good way of naming things. And leading you into the dynamic of certain paintings through kind of cinematic moves. But to go back to my beginnings, I started in high school being interested in 70s avant-garde cinema. I grew up in the suburbs of New York, and I spent a lot of time in the basement of the Whitney and at Anthology Film Archives. And it's really where I cut my teeth in abstraction. Was, you know, seeing people like Brakhage and Maya Deren and Michael Snow. And I made non-narrative films in high school. And then when I got to college, I was...
Okay, let me just ask you that. So non-narrative films, like Stan Brakhage, or things that were in no way telling a story?
They were in no way telling a story, but they were looking at the everyday. They were looking at... they were telling stories through the visual entirely. So, like those practitioners using the camera as a way of both recording and describing what you're seeing and what you're expressing. So they were... This was the 70s, the late 70s, or I guess mid-70s. And so it was a politically fraught time, and so they had a kind of political edge. They were commentaries on economic states. They were, I mean, in my kind of high school grandiose way, or they were about, I don't know. But anyway, that was the idea of them. So I thought I could tell big stories, big ideas, using this form. But what I learned from it is really the power of the visual and the power of a kind of meditative visual experience of viewing. And so that's what I took away from that. And then I later brought that. I started painting my last year of college, and it's when I brought that into play.
When you brought, so the paintings from your last year of college is when you brought into play painting itself or cinema?
I was working, I don't know how relevant this is, but I was working with, I was writing about certain contemporary art movements, and I then decided to, I was also studying I was studying certain kind of language analyses. It was the time of semiotics, and so I was breaking down sort of symbolic and cultural systems of language and looking at how they're constructed. So I sort of used that the same way in the kind of paintings I first made, and that led me to marking, because marking is the kind of, you know, unit of expression in painting and drawing. And I drew then for 10 years. And in drawing, using drawing materials, I became interested in the indexical nature of marking, which carries the way in which it's made with it. Very much like I saw the camera doing in 70s avant-garde cinema. Hmm. So it's this form of expression that can both record, trace, describe at the same time. And then also the sort of phenomenological bodily experience of seeing that kind of visual language. Hmm. That's sort of how things evolved. And then when I came to paint, the fluidity of paint then made me increasingly more interested in gesture as the result of that.
So let's talk about that, because gesture is something that I know you keep coming back to and is an essential part of this whole show. Gesture, as we spoke a little bit off the record before, when we were going through the show, you were saying it's fundamental to, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but how we understand painting. So gesture, in your work, how do you see that interacting with, if it's not too big a question, the sort of essence of painting or the history of painting? Yeah. This is what you're involved in, right?
Well, if you think about it, like back to cave painting, it's at the base of any kind of visual mark. I mean, it doesn't even need to be in an art context, or like cave painting wasn't, but how a mark tells. I mean, how you how it carries meaning through how it's been put down. And you see that in any kind of indexical mark. You know, we see it in, like, you know, stains on the street. And you think about, you know, the thing that generates them, you know, oil from a car or dog pissing, you know. It's like, and then you think, I think in turn about, I'm interested in how that then records, you know, how that happened. Mm. And then it brings you back to that process. So, I guess maybe for the last 30 years I've been investigating gesture as a kind of, for all of its sort of spatial and temporal possibilities of description. And then once I started to incorporate mechanical devices for recording that mark, or gestural marks, I could, that then expanded my vocabulary and possibilities of what I could do with it, and how I could, you know, play on that sort of duality of a gestural mark.
And in the mechanical apparatus, you're talking about printmaking?
Yeah.
With the recording that. So I want to talk about printmaking, but also, I mean,
but I've done it in other. I've done it with other mediums too. I've done it in glass. I've done it with other mediums that where you can arrest, an action, and then hold it in its form.
In glass.
When I've done a lot of collaborative work, and the collaborative work with like other artists has been always interesting, because I'm looking for the essence of what I do and how I can bring that to what they do and to their logic and their voice. I worked with a glass maker, a woman who did sort of lamp work, And so I was fascinated by how if you take a rod of glass and you put it in front of a flame and then you pull it out, that, you know, the gravitational force of the melted glass and then holding it away from the flame holds that form.
That's really interesting. Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah. So that's a kind of animation, and then stopped animation. So that's another filmic thing where, you know, you have, because it's film, not video, but I guess the same is true.
A frozen moment. It's a photographic
moment,
right?
Thing. A freeze frame. Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, it's also, I mean, it relates in a way to the image that I saw that's, in a sense, associated with the show, but the graffiti on the back of the truck that says,
that's
Moser,
Moser.
Right? It's your name, your last name, but also is a piece of graffiti, is also a piece of mark making. It's very,
it's a tag, yeah.
It's a tag, and it's a gesture, right?
That's right.
So I'm mentioning that because part of your process, whereas you're collaborating with people, it's also about looking at the world and seeing these gestures in a myriad forms.
Yeah. So things that get reflected in things that mime other things. You know, the thing that was so remarkable for me about the graffiti tag and other people is that it almost looks like a sort of articulate version of what I do. Mm. You know, that you can actually read my name in a language that I work with.
Right.
Whereas I, you know, assiduously avoid any nameability in the kind of imagery I use. Mm.
So you've used a lot of other... you've brought a lot to painting in different ways or used different... devices. In this show, it seems that there's a lot of printmaking in it, right? So let's just talk a little bit about how printmaking came to be such an integral part of the show, because though there'll be images in this interview that people can see, a lot of it you can't quite read as well, I would imagine, on the web, because the subtlety of how you're producing, you know, ghosts or you know, multiple states. I mean, I'm not quite saying it the right way, but that there's a subtlety to not only the surface of your work, but also to the way the print making process interacts with that. That's seems like something that has to be seen,
which is, I think, a very good thing.
I think so too.
It is difficult in this age of people knowing work from the internet, you know, digitally. The kind of imagery I make is very hard to reproduce, and it's not exactly deliberate on my part, but it is because I'm interested in the bodily experience of viewing works of art, and I play with certain things about that, you know, certain elements that are seen differently depending on your relationship to the canvas or to the piece of paper. You know, sort of fluorescent paint or metallic paint that moves with light. So, you know, so that whole spatial temporal experience of viewing is very much a factor in knowing the work.
But you've used a lot of different types of processes here, right? We're talking about silkscreen, intaglio, monoprint.
And
there's collages in the show, but you've also printed directly on the canvas and then applied paint on top of
that.
Right,
so that's new, and that's what's new in this show. About 12 years ago, I started to be invited to work with master printers, which was kind of late in my development as a painter, but I never went to art school, and I didn't do these things early on. So,
you never went to art school?
No. So,
before you go on there, I want to hear about that. You didn't go to art school, but you were interested in filmmaking. That was all high school.
No, in college too.
Oh.
Yeah.
So go on, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We're talking about printmaking.
But what was fantastic about printmaking was that a painter friend lent me her etching press when she was going off to Rome to the academy for a year. And she said, you know, here, take this. This will be really interesting for you. And I thought, oh, I don't want this thing because I'm, you know, I I'm really interested in what the hand can do. I don't want an intervention. And I don't want to, anyway, so but then when I started to monoprint, I realized that the printed mark was the authentic indexical mark that I had been miming and faking in all my previous work in the way that I had been painting.
So what does that mean exactly, the authentic indexical mark?
That the way that the print image is a direct record of, carries all of the ways in which it's made. So you see the weight of, in its recording of a mark. So you see the weight, you see all of the weight of the brush or the hand or the thumbprints, and as well as the process of making is recorded in the mark. So if you think of like Degas monoprints, where he uses sort of the accidents of the press, like what happens in the press, the way it smears paint, then becomes part of, you know, like he makes the smear a bush in the front of the landscape. So in that sense, that it's authentic to the process is the image you end up seeing. Whereas I was always mediating my mark in painting, which I still do, to make it appear to be a print, to arrest the gesture, so that it is a mark that's been stopped and rewritten or repainted and reimagined. Mm-hmm. So the process of printmaking is a reimagining, is a reproduction, but what you see is what it is. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. So what you see is, I mean, as you said, with printmaking, is also the evidence of its process.
Exactly, and the whole evidential nature of that is like so fascinating to me. That the evidence of a mediated mark, you know, so that was like, oh my God, that's exactly what, you know, I've always wanted. So that I've been exploring in every kind of printing technique that has been offered to me. And then more recently, I'm starting to bring those things together, sort of hybridize them or play them, you know, play them off of each other, like monoprinting on top of silk screening. So playing with the temporality of different kinds of processes of printing against themselves. So that's what, and that's when I started to take fragments from all those projects and look at them, you know, in these montages, the collages, to really see how they could create these, you know, more sort of mononymic relationships to each other, like how one, and so those, you know, using different printing techniques and different fragments from different print techniques and different kinds of paper, different kinds of applications, different mediums.
And you're talking now, which is, because that's fascinating. You're talking about, in part, the collages that are also in this show,
right,
where there's multiple techniques and there's all these layers that are happening there, both from the process, but also different planes or layers of
right. So, because for the show, I really, because of the nature of the structure of the gallery, and it has that long corridor space as you enter it, it seemed like a really good way of setting up a narrative about what I'm doing, to set up a kind of map. This is what I'm, you know, I am taking handmade marks and printed marks and looking at them in relation to each other.
Hmm.
I mean, in the most simple way.
Right.
And that's what those are doing. And so I felt like it was a very good introduction to my then deciding to print onto canvas, which I had never done before.
And the printing on canvas, of course, has all kinds of interesting things that are happening there that are also, as you were saying, kind of indexical, or showing evidence of the process itself in one particular canvas, which I'd also think this would be something that would probably be difficult to reproduce. There's moire patterns happening, and
which is ironic, right? You're using this reproductive technique to make things that are like entirely perceptual and not reproducible.
Right.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. And And also, but this show is kind of, it feels very, I mean, maybe, I guess in a way, you always feel this way as an artist, right? That this show is a cumulative show. It's of everything you've ever done. This particular work is kind of built on everything you've done before. But it seems that this show also, because you're using the printmaking, that there is something that's articulating your language and approach that you haven't before,
yeah.
But that's very successful. And in a way, not that your previous work hasn't been, but it's adding a lot of layers in a way that seems very exciting.
Thanks. No, that's... I think a painting is this generative, expansive language to work in. So I'm always looking for ways of pushing it beyond what I know and what it's done for me or what I do with it. So this was and in all of my work never holds still, very much like what I'm interested in imagery. So it's I'm always like pushing into these strange and interesting places to take it. So this was just another, you know, the techniques of printmaking have been enormously exciting that way for me, you know, and how to sort of take these methods and bring them, you know, and use them in my work in ways to understand better the language in which I work in.
It's exciting to see the show and to look at, you know, those processes up close and, you know, as we were saying earlier, they have to be seen. There's another element that seems, I can't think of another word other than kind of like a ghost image, but it's also kind of like the printmaking process of doing, you know, multiple states until a plate gets...
Yes, it goes, yeah.
But that seems, maybe we could just talk about that a little bit, that part of the show and part of the... what could be negative space of the canvas feels like something was there or is fading away. There's this sense of disappearance and reappearance, right?
Yeah. And that was surprisingly interesting. It was a real surprise for me in the printing, you know, because I had to set up these images for Brand X, the silkscreen shop in which I am. The brilliant Brand X, who printed the work for me, which, you know, again was a collaborative process, so I had to design them in advance of having them printed, which is not how I paint, and so that in itself was interesting. And then there were all of these surprises that happened in the printing, you know, in because I was using translucent ink. The overlays that then generated new imagery, which I couldn't predict, but more importantly to the idea of the white ground or the negative space, is that, and I don't know, negative space always seems sort of a derogatory term to me.
Yeah, it does.
For me, a white field, the white ground of a canvas is a generative ground, is a ground that is luminous and asserts itself and also plays with that, you know, the artifice of painting. You know, it plays with the fact that this is a physical thing on a white, usually on a white wall, so that it is a physical object in the room that then is an illusionistic one. So in these, that was an interesting thing that happened, whereas the imagery that was printed then became the kind of figure on that white ground, right? But yet it had this ghostly quality. So it could play as both being present and it could play as both a presence and an absence, a shadow, and something, you know, there.
Yeah, there's something that's so you know, kind of poetic about that too. What's, you know, what we're not seeing or what we are seeing or what slowly seems to appear or not. You know, that seems almost, I mean, not narrative, but that there's associations we all have with those kind of things, visually as well as well as narratively, right?
But there is a narrative, because there's the recording, there's the evidence of how that imagery is put down, you know, whereas you have this overlay, you have the overlay of the images of the brush marks that have been recorded and printed, but then you also have the evidence of the screen, so you have this kind of implication of a frame within the frame of the canvas. Mm-hmm. So that creates these kind of planar suggestions of space, which I love, because it's also just evidence of their making. You know, it's the screen that's around the image that's you know, going down as a kind of veil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. And maybe it's interesting to talk about this towards the end too, the ground itself, since we don't want to use a term like negative space, but
the white ground
is very beautiful, right? It's very it's something that I wouldn't see in an image on the web, or can't really be easily reproduced or reproduced at all, really, in the images for this interview,
because of its tactility, right? Mm. I mean, it's kind of...
Also because it's so...
It seduces you into wanting to touch it.
Yeah, it does. You know, you were touching the canvas. I wanted to touch the canvas, but wasn't going to. But there's a quality to it that's, you know, it's flat in one way, but it also seems enormously sensual. I had to ask you when
that's
I saw the image, what is this? What's happening with the ground here?
Yeah.
And that seems to be...
And that's the essential condition of a painting, right? I mean, it's both physical and expressive, emotive. Mm. You know, it's like, it's there. And so that's actually what interested me about what came of the printed image, that it set up these kind of structures, the fixed structure that I then, you know, brought my hand in and painted in relation to, responded to. It was a provocation, the same way the white ground is a kind of seductive provocation to touch.
I like that. The question I always ask at the end is, hopefully we'll put you on the spot, but is, what are you reading right now? Is there a book you're reading? Could be off topic.
Are we all reading the newspaper? I mean, it's like, it's a pretty distracting time.
That's true. I'm reading the newspaper more than I'd like to.
There are blogs online. One of the things that came up, I read a lot of fiction. I'm reading Lincoln and the Bardo. And I'm fascinated by how he has found a form. He's found this, you know, he's working in this, have you read it? He's working in this liminal space of time, you know, he's working in the Bardo. I mean, he has people in the Bardo, which is between life and death, you know, it's on the way. And so to choose to work, to set parameters for working in this space, that's this liminal space, gives him enormous freedom linguistically, you know, narratively. I mean, every, you know, to use the language in which he works. And so I'm interested in people who do that. There's another, Matt Porter wrote this book called Grief is a Thing with Feathers, where he's actually, it's this beautiful little book where he's pushing language. It's many different kinds of voices and ways of writing, some of which just devolve into like sound, or evolve into sound. And then, of course, friends like Juliana Bruno's Surface Book has been we've had really interesting dialogues about filmic space versus painting space, and what it means to actually work with a screened image. She's been doing a great deal of writing about her interest in what the whole idea of screen, and that comes from early Renaissance ideas of scrim, and how it really that film screens came from a physical thing, a thing that was very much like a silk screen, this piece of fabric that was framed and sat in rooms to veil light, you know, the light from windows or the flames from a fire, and how that in turn became a surface on which light is projected, a luminous surface. So the filtered screen becoming, you know, so.
Jill, it's great talking to you today. It's a beautiful show, and I hope everyone will come see it that hears this. But thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.